Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Do you want to get more out of your short-term rental? Purchase your next vacation rental using the Short-Term Shop and gain access to our free weekly mastermind, the Management Monday Mastermind. Each week we cover different topics and have industry experts presenting content for your enjoyment and success. If you're not already a client, start your journey at theshorttermshop.com and join us every Monday for our free client-only mastermind, theshorttermshop.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of The Short Term Show. I've got a super cool set of guests today. I have Ashita and Harshad Lalan.
You got it.
So sorry. Such a jerk. They are the founders and owners of Ashita Interiors. They do a lot of really cool projects here in the Smokies, Western North Carolina, and the Florida Panhandle. So I'm really excited to hear their story today. How's it going, guys?
Awesome. Very, very good. Thanks, Avery. Thanks for having us on your show. I'm Ashita, and we started our journey in SDR world as investors ourselves. And my background is in design and architecture. So I've worked in architecture firms, and I also, as I said, designer in Bollywood industry. So the whole SDR design is a perfect amalgamation of the two. And when we started our journey back in 2019, I don't think a lot of people were focused on design-centric SDRs, and a little would go a longer way. But for us, it was the reverse. We were focusing on design, and that helped us set us apart and got traction, and our entire business is due to word of mouth. And here we are, you know. So, yeah.
Cool. What's your role?
I'm Harshad, and basically whatever she wants me to do. I'm the husband, I'm the assistant, you know, but my background is in engineering. So when we initially started investing with one of our very big investments in the beginning, we took out all our 401k money during COVID, and we were investing in our first STR, our second STR. That was a big investment amount. So I was just like, I want to make sure this is going to perform because I don't have any savings left.
Yeah.
So that's where the whole analysis part of it came in. Like, hey, how do I make sure it's going to work? How do I make sure what revenue is going to generate? What should we put into it? So I kind of bring on that the analysis portion of what we do to the design firm. So I do the data analysis, the consultation. We come up with what that avatar needs to be, what the amenity needs to be. And then we don't start design until we have that figured out with the clients. And then she takes that on and she does her magic from there on.
Okay. Awesome. So I want to back up and talk first about y'all's investment portfolio. So you own in several markets. How do you decide what market you're going to buy in?
So initially, we are from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. So when we found out, we were avid travelers ourselves. Our investment journey did not start with short-term rentals right away. We actually, we were thinking about where our lives are heading, and our entire goal was to travel more, right? So we just wanted that sweet spot for us to have like 10K of passive income was crucial at that time. And that's when we were, that's what our goal was. And when we started venturing into multifamily, but that was not the right fit for us because there was no space for creativity. And
it's just too much to have to maintain.
Too much to maintain, no creativity at all. And since we were traveling and living in short-term rentals, it was like, let's just do it. Let's just venture into first short-term rental. Our first deal was, we were just getting close in that Cedar Rapids market. So, and then we started going like 4-hour radius or 30 minute and then 4-hour radius. We wanted to manage our own. We wanted to have control on our rentals. And, And then we would also research and study like short-term shop. We would listen to your podcast, Bigger Pockets.
Bigger Pockets is the best.
Short-term shop. We have literally self-taught ourselves listening to all the influential people in the industry. And that's when we went to Ozarks and then we went to Emerald Coast and we fell in love with the first time. And then
I think when we started, it was all very emotional. Like, hey, where do we want to go? You know, that's kind of how it started for Picking Markets. It's very different now.
I think that's important. I think that's actually the best way to start is a market that you know, that you like to go to, that you believe in, rather than just only making very cold data-driven decisions. I've talked about this a few times recently. Like, we've got a really big Wall Street fund client that made extremely data-driven decisions buying in some of our markets. They didn't buy with us, but we're now trying to sell their properties for them. And because of that, they would look at the numbers of what, say, a five-bedroom would make and then go find the cheapest five-bedroom in the market and say, oh, numbers look great on this, let's buy it. But then that cheapest five-bedroom is, like, weird. Yeah. People don't really want to rent it. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's really important to have that qualitative side and not just the quantitative side before you make decisions, because having only one or the other will get you in trouble. You really have to have both.
Yeah, I mean, the whole mindset was just lifestyle assets when we begin with. We're like, hey, I want a lake property, I want a beach property, I want a ski property, I want something in the city, right? That was the intention. Like, hey, what's the best markets that fit within that idea of we can own it? And then we're just kind of marrying both.
I don't think we were even thinking of markets. We were thinking of what we would enjoy. And then obviously rent it and enjoy it like once or twice a year whenever we could go. So our first property in Lake, it was a riverfront property in Iowa, which was so unique to the space, a place in Iowa. No one would have a riverfront property. It was a two-bedroom, two-bath cabin. We went in, did all the cosmetic renovations ourselves. So we painted, put the floors in, did all the work. And it's still performing. Like, it brings in six figures every year consistently over the last 3 years.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. And yeah, I think that the having a place that you would stay, again, I think that's something that now, because there's so much information out there, like back when I started in 2015, there was no information. We had to just do the best we could. But looking at a property and saying, would I stay here, is really, really important, because I think so many times investors get so caught up in the finding the best deal and the lowest price that they tell themselves these stories in their head, because they wouldn't stay in the place. But they're like, well, you know, there's somebody out there that is going to want a budget property and they're going to be willing to be an hour away from everything, or they're going to be willing to have this dumpy house. Like, so I think that that's really important. And a lot of people skip that step and just only look at numbers. So I think that's like, guys, if you take nothing else away from this podcast, just make sure that it's something you would stay into.
And not only for investments, even for our design clients, we put ourselves in their shoes. We put ourselves in our co-host client's shoes and see it from our perspective. You know, it's a service-driven industry. You need to look out for their best interest there.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. So let's talk about your design now. So I've heard your name around a lot, always good things. And so that's why I was really excited when you reached out. So let's talk about how you choose the design of a property. So if I'm going to hire you, and let's just use Smokies because we're sitting in them right now. So when I think a lot of people just try to go in there and go nuts with design and don't really think about the why of it. So how do you guys decide this is how I'm going to design this place?
So we actually have a good 4-5-6 rule in our design form. It actually kind of came in from how we started investing. I kind of get into a little bit just to kind of give an idea. The four was the right market, the right property, the right design, and the right execution. So we ideally like people to reach out to us when they're in that buying stage. So we kind of act as a partner to them to kind of help them make their decision. So if they're buying something, they want to know, hey, how much is it going to cost to renovate this? Or how much is it going to cost to furnish it? So we are kind of helping them along the way. Mm-hmm. So, but that's not always the case. Sometimes people buy it and then they come to us for design. Then the next part is the five principles. So this is basically what we do in our process, kind of very key, is we have a dedicated consultation call that is just purely trying to figure out these exact questions. So those five things are the avatar, obviously. And we kind of do like the primary avatar and then the secondary avatar, figuring out the right bedroom count, the right occupancy. So we can take this cabin we're sitting in, an example, right? So this is 8-bedroom cabin. So when what we're looking at it, okay, what are the existing 8-bedroom cabins? How much are they doing? And then I'm looking at what kind of guests are they attracting? So this would be like looking at, it was much harder before, it's gotten easier as tools have developed. Now we have like ChatGPT and stuff that we can trying to use and make that analysis a little bit easy. But the method is the same. Still looking, doing the enemy method, trying to see what the top performing properties are, who they are attracting, try to understand what that market is. Then the next thing is obviously the amenities. So it's like, what is the right amenities to offer? That's going to try and maximize it, not to throw in everything, but that ties in with the budget as well. So for that, we actually have a full pro forma. We actually go back and forth with the design client, say, hey, for your overall investment, what is that total budget that is going to make sense? And we are running multiple scenarios. So for example, like let's say in this one, we have done some themed rooms. We kind of put an estimate to do these four themed rooms, you're going to spend maybe $15,000 more, $20,000 more. But based on this, we think you can get this much more revenue. And then what does that mean for your ROI? So we are doing those cost analysis to figure out the right amenity count and then set the budgets for those amenities where you want to prioritize. And then finally, we're looking at the schedule as well as to when they're launching in terms of is it in the peak season or do we have time? Is it in the off season? So if there's any renovation component, can we like phase it out, do it later, just go live right now, get the bookings in the summertime, fall time, come back in. This cabin was all new construction. And they actually closed like July end, I think it was. Yeah. So it was like almost towards the end. It was like, just let's get it furnished. Let's get it out there. So we spent like 2-3 months trying to do that. So we get all these things figured out. It's a very iterative process back and forth with the clients to and you know, understand what's the right mix. But once we have that locked in, that's when the design actually starts. Until then, Ishita does not get on the drawing board doing any of that. So we have that locked in. And then she has the six design principles that she follows when she's designing the properties. Maybe you can expand
so
on that a bit.
Yeah, so when I get the data from him, me and my assistant designers, we actually study it. We talk about it. And we have six design principles, first being the hero shot. So it's a 5-second rule when the guests are looking for their next vacation stop. They're browsing through thousands of listings. You need to have that hero shot photo, that the scroll stopping photo that you can call. So when we walk in the property, you know, sometimes we design around, we know either the deck and, you know, the exterior photo of this with the view is going to be the hero shot. Then we design around that first to make that more impactful. For instance, if you're sitting in this cabin, you know, you're literally in a cabin farm lane, so you don't have the views. This cabin did not have the views, but it has a square footage. So the priority here became the amenities, the rooms, or the indoor pool, or we have a pavilion. So we made the pavilion having like an outdoor movie experience, like made it a retreat experience. So those are the experiences also that we are sharing with people through photos. The second would be like the first five, like the grid on the Airbnb that you see the first five photo. Again, we want to increase the marketability of the rental. So what are the first five amenities that we're going to market? So those are the things that we choose. Then is the theme and the styling, and that's when the guest avatar and all that we study. Sometimes the architecture of the house as well gives us the clue as to what it needs to be. Does it need to be farmhouse, coastal? Does it need to be more themed? Do we need a bachelorette or do we go art deco? So some of those theme and styling of the home comes into play. And the last is experiences, right? Airbnb vacation rentals are all about experiences. It could be as small as having like a USB charging port next to your nightstand, next to your bedside, or it could be like a aha moment when you enter a Harry Potter room and you're like, oh my God, it's just an immersive experience. So all these little experiences count. And the last two will be a cleanability. We are investors. We like all our properties to be pet friendly because we are pet parents ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we make sure that our furniture and everything is easily cleanable, durable, and you know, ready for a turnaround of 4 hours or 5 hours that the cleaners have. Or the second would be using ruggable rugs in a high traffic area, which are easily cleanable. And the last is, you know, people usually say it, but they don't focus on it as much as I would like them to, but safety, making sure that you're having all the first aid, all your fire extinguishers, all the carpets having its rug pad under it. And there are companies out there, Breezeways, who give you certification of safety. I would recommend everyone to get it and make sure that your rentals are focused for guests.
Oh, so, that was not too long of an answer, but that's the entire process.
No, I love it. I mean, you can cut it.
I think that all that is yeah. really good information. Yeah. And guys, they've been referencing the house that we're sitting in. We are going to post a walkthrough of this house on YouTube. So make sure you check that out on our YouTube channel. You might already be on our YouTube channel watching this on video, but if you're not, check it out on YouTube. So this one is an 8-bedroom. Do you guys have an idea offhand of what it probably should make, what it should gross?
Yeah, so when we started doing the analysis, we started looking from the top properties down, right? So what we found, you have those 9-bedroom plus very large homes that are bringing in 350 plus 400 plus revenue. Then you have some 6-bedroom homes, but they have a large space, either have a beautiful view of the mountains, or they have space where they can maybe have some events. Yeah. So they're also generating pretty high revenue in that 300, 350 plus range. This one does not have that view. It has that pavilion for that outdoor space. So what we looked at is there were already existing cabins, same size, same builder, probably same, very similar layout. And we looked at what they were doing. So they were in that 300 to 400 range from what we could look at that point. And they were fairly new within a year of when this was built as well. So our target was, all right, let's try and target 350. It should be our goal, based on what they purchased at and their down payment and everything. We had about 200K budget allocated for everything, renovations, furnishing, design fee, all of that combined together. So that kind of made sense for them in terms of their return on investment. So that's kind of what our goal is with this cabin, like around 350. It's only been live since October and it's only been about 5 months. So I think right now they have about 175K on the books in the last 5 months. Obviously, we don't know. This has all been slow season and then the summer is ahead of us. So I'm hoping they'll get close to it. So that's something there to see, you know, because we did go something very unique with this cabin, with the theme cabin, which is very rare for the Smokies market. You don't normally see that. Yeah. And when you try to go something that's off what everyone's doing, either it's going to pay you back in return. That's going to be really, really good. Or sometimes you try it, sometimes it may not work, but it won't do worse than any other cabins anyway. So, yeah.
Okay, awesome. So 350. And again, guys, check this one out on YouTube. We're going to walk through and look at all the cool stuff they've done because it is very cool. There's nothing in the Smokies like this, and there's a lot of cabins out here.
This episode is brought to you by Short-Term Rental Listing Advice. Join this Facebook group and post your listing to get advice from other hosts, including myself, on how you can improve your listing. Or just post your property so you can show off. Join us at strlistingadvice.com. That's strlistingadvice.com. If you want to buy a short-term rental in one of the best vacation markets in America, you're looking for the Short-Term Shop. They are the experts in the vacation rental space. Their team of realtors are fantastic. And if you use the Short-Term Shop to buy your home, you'll have access to free classes with me to teach you how to get your property up and running. Join us at theshorttermshop.com, brokered by eXp.
So let's talk about, Ashita, you mentioned that y'all don't just do design. You also help with rehab. So helping people with the BRRRR strategy. So can you tell me a little bit about that?
I think that's our saving grail, right? Like we love BRRRR strategies. All our investments are value add and renovation. We help other clients as well. When they buy a dated home, we go in. It depends on what the house is and what we are targeting to. If it's our own investment that I'm just giving an example. We bought this property in Black Mountain, North Carolina last year for $630. It was a ghost town, I would like to say. I entered and I was scared entering that house. But it had so much potential. It did not have the views that other... We were studying the comps, right? The other cabins with views were doing much better. But the advantage of this particular place was it had a area, land to work with. So, and plus 2,000 square feet of unfinished basement. Mm. So we went in, we finished the 2,000 square feet of unfinished basement. We upgraded the bathrooms. We upgraded the furnishing. It was a woodlock cabin on the main floor level. So we tried to paint the trims black, made it more modern, made the entire landscape area an oasis for kids to hang out and families to hang out. So we added a bunch of amenities, outdoor games, pavilion where you have outdoor kitchen. So a 630K property, the ARV is anywhere between 1.3 to 1.6.
Oh, wow.
We're going through refinance right now. So
potentially $1 million difference.
Yes.
Well, we put in 400K into it.
Yeah,
so
we did.
630 put it plus we put in like 400K into it.
So yes. Still, that's yeah. amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But when we did a pre-appraisal before we gave them a list of things that we were going to do, but we did more than what we told them. Yeah. But yeah, it is about that. It was in that window of 1.3 to 1.6. So we're hoping we land somewhere later. Yeah. But and the gross revenue that we are expecting would be anywhere between 200 to 300K. Actually, we just launched it last week and we have 50K in the bookings already.
Oh, wow. In a week.
The first week was pretty
good.
Well, I mean, the one thing I probably add, you know, I love the BRRRR strategy, and I'll probably address both from our own investment experience as well, and also what she does for clients as well. So whenever I went into a market that, because of we're buying low something that we're able to add value, she's able to design it exactly for what makes sense for that client. Like, so if a particular area needs outdoor amenities, we can go do that. A lot of times when you're buying new construction, you're already kind of paying premium. You may not have that space, or you may not feel like adding anything specific for that clientele. And then in all our properties, because we are appraising and forcing that value up, we're able to refi out and then get our initial investment out. So now you have an asset that you don't have any money in, but now it's already set up to maximize the short-term rental revenue. So that really helped us just kind of grow our own portfolio quite a bit.
It just becomes a snowball effect after, right? Mm-hmm. Because the BRRRR strategy is all about that. But also about renovations, we had another project, which was a new construction, 3-bedroom home. You know, they put in 500K in it, but they would only gross about like 50K because it was a 3-bedroom home. But they had, again, the land. So when we were studying the market, we pitched them an idea, let's make this again an oasis where it becomes an extension of the house so you can have more people come in. They can picture themselves having outdoor amenities like hot tub saunas and the dinings and the fire pit. And I think they're about to hit like that 6 figures. So you can double the amount. You need to your investment is high up front because now you're doing the landscape portion of it. But then that's a value add. You're increasing the force, appreciating the value of the property as well. So,
yeah, I think that this is such an important strategy for people to understand now, especially new investors who, you know, they didn't get in before COVID and prices shot up. And with the whole saturation talk, I think that value add properties have always been a great strategy, right? But even more so now where a lot of the turnkey stuff, it might be harder to make the numbers work than finding something. We just posted a reel the other day about how I love to buy ugly duckling properties. Like, I like to be in the best location, buy the ugly house, fix it up, make it a pretty house. And now you've got the pretty house in the good location. You force some equity. You're forcing income by updating it. So that's my favorite strategy, especially now the way interest rates are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's also for the other way to look at it for me was also a safety net, because let's say for whatever reason something happened, it did not perform as you expected to perform. You still have an asset that's appreciated in value. You can always exit without losing money. You can always sell it because you have forced that value in. So it was always that backup in my mind, safety net. Hey, I have full control on this. I know what we can control, what we can go implement. If it does not book, shouldn't. But if it doesn't book, at least you have an exit that's in positive.
Yeah, totally agree. I want to flip back to the design thing for a minute. Yeah. So if somebody comes in and they've got a really big budget and they want to do all these crazy things, do you ever tell someone no to an amenity? Like, hey, you don't need to have this.
Oh, yes. Multiple times we've done that. Let me take an example of another. Just a client who came with a property. They had it was a small house, but they had a huge land. And they came in and they asked us to, I want all these amenities and I want a pickleball court. And my all-in budget is 80K. So for in that case, we would be like, you know, pickleball court is not your best investment strategy right now, because just to put up a pickleball court and pour concrete would cost $20,000 right there. So there are so many other things that you can invest in and get more ROI on your money that you're putting in rather than putting a pickleball court. So yes, we have, I don't know if you can think of any other example.
One more thing to add to that is, like, you know, there's, you sometimes have that idea about a market if you've been in the market for a while, but what we've also done is, like, we're kind of learning from other data people in the industry. So, like, I've taken courses with Kenny, SGR Insights, and then John Bianchi, the data guy. So they put this course together one time, how to evaluate amenities and how to exactly calculate, or at least what the data will tell you what amenity would bring in. So we started implementing that in our design as well. So I've purchased data for our area where we are. And if something like that comes in, we are able to now kind of show them, if you put in pickleball court, our estimate for putting something like that, if you're starting from nothing, if it's land, you've got to build up the concrete base, you've got to paint it, you've got to do all that work, it's going to be like $30,000. The data does not show me that you will make that much back. It will probably take you 4 years or 5 years. But we could rather invest maybe in a sauna. In our market, sauna works a lot better, which is a $5,000 investment, but it shows that you're going to go up like $15,000. So once you just kind of present that data and kind of show them these are the top of properties in our area, that's what they have, that makes that decision easy in trying to convince them. But, you know, sometimes people do have that emotional attachment to, hey, I would really love a pickleball court no matter what. So you try to give them that data, and then at the end of the day, clients still have that decision making, like, hey, yeah, I see what it is, but it would be cool to have.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's really important too, because especially when somebody's coming in with a big budget and they just want to go all in and do all these crazy things, it's really important to understand, just like when you're buying a property, you have to understand the market that you're buying in, the type of person that comes there to visit, and understand that pickleball courts, like, might work amazing in Scottsdale, but they might not work great in a mountain market. So, and there's, you know, insert amenity here that, you know, saunas, I'm probably not going to put a sauna in my beach house because it's a sauna outside. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's important to kind of have that awareness of what the guests are coming to do. So enemy method again, you know, not just amenities, but like the type of property. You're not going to buy a brick ranch house and redo it in a mountain market, probably. Mm-hmm. People kind of look for cabins, but, you know, a brick ranch house that's redone might work great again, like, you know, Scottsdale or a beach market. You know, it just depends on the market 100%. And you really have to put yourself in that tourist shoes yourself, not just, you know, telling yourself stories about, oh, people might want a discount or people might want a cheaper property further away, and like making things up about why you're going to buy a crappy property. But, you know, really putting yourself in the shoes of the tourism. And I think that people make this mistake so much. They don't take the time to understand the market that they're buying in. Mm-hmm. And really understand what's important to the guests there as a whole, like what they're looking for in a property. And they just say, oh yeah, pickleball court, I bet I can make 50 grand extra on that, and just do it.
Right, absolutely. You know, you do have those clients that bring in that whole budget, I want to go all in. But in our experience, a lot of times we get people that actually don't budget enough. So we get a lot more of that too. So, like, for example, we had a client in Dustin, Florida. They have a nice home, just literally one block from the beach. It's like walking distance in a
gated community.
Gated community. And then the home is not done right. They bought it as they bought it with old furniture. And I when they came to us, they're doing about like 45 or 50K. And it's one block from the beach. If you look for five bedroom in Destin, they should be doing 150 plus.
Yeah.
You know, So doing 50K doesn't make sense. They said, hey, we need to increase our budget, but we only have 20K to spend. So with 20K, there's not much you can really do. Like, you know, if you think about it, one living room or one bedroom, let's forget about even trying to change the furniture. You're trying to add amenities, you're trying to add games. It just goes away in one or two spaces. Mm-hmm. So we said this could really perform 150, but really this property needs a good 60, 70K, maybe a little bit more of a cash infusion. If you put that in, you will get to 150, you'll get that return back. But if you put in 20K, I don't know how much that's going to really push. How much difference is that going to make? So sometimes that's a little bit of a harder conversation to get people to do it. But sometimes people do. I mean, you know, a lot of times people come to her with a lower budget, but then it's like, I was telling you the 20 uncle example.
Yeah, I mean, there is, we have a few clients who have come in realistically thinking, it is a healthy budget of having 150K all-in cost. But the property size and the amenities that we wanted to add and convert a three-car garage into game rooms and add a sauna, a custom-built sauna, we were like, you know, we probably need more. And it can be, because the AirDNA revenue, when you research it, for this particular house that we're giving example, showed 130K gross revenue. So they had an all-in budget of 150. When we researched the market and we told them to, you know, because it was a luxury clientele location, we were going to attract more wealthy Wendy's coming in that market. So we're like, let's just upgrade the bathrooms. The bathrooms look too dingy. But everything was backed up by numbers. Last year, they just completed 1 year in a month ago, mid-April. Not even a month ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just completed. Yeah. Mid-April last
year,
week.
Right now. Yeah.
Yeah. So they did 275K in gross revenue.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But then all in was 230. But I mean.
It's a big jump.
Yeah, that's sticker shock. Like sometimes when you look at it ahead of time, it feels like, wow, I mean, I have someone else or, you know, I think I could get it done for 130, 140K. But sometimes we give them like, this is all going to take 240. But the thesis behind it is that when you're putting in that much, that's the higher revenue you're also targeting. That's going to give you higher ROI on it. So.
Awesome. Well, guys, this has been so informative. I really appreciate it. So we have three questions that we ask everyone at the end of the show. Either or both of you can answer however you want to do it. So first one is, what advice would you give 20-year-old Harshad and Ishita?
Do you want to go first?
I would say 20-year-old me was probably just, I had a good time in college, if I'm thinking about 20-year-old myself. But I guess I would have just maybe taken a little bit more time to get more financially educated. It was just money in, money out, have fun, just throw it all away. And until she came along, she's got a little bit more of the strategic business mind to come into play. Like, hey, we should go do something about it. So, but I would have probably, that's what I would have told myself. Get financially educated about what it could mean for you in the future. Yeah.
Great answer.
And for me, I think I would just tell the 20-year-old self that don't get attracted with like the starry objects, you know, the fun, the parties, and then popularity or whatever the starry objects are in your 20s. Just focus and be dedicated and with whatever you want to achieve, be at it. And that perseverance and dedication, all these things, starry objects are just a byproduct of it. Mm-hmm. So just be more sincere, because then, you know, that 20s just go by and then you don't want to be working. Yeah. You are working always. We are like, the hard work never stops, but you can just shorten that.
Yeah. Great advice. Kind of similar question, but for other people. So what advice would you give a new investor who's getting started today?
I would say we've talked about it a lot throughout our conversation. I would just say there's so much information out there. At least now in 2024, we have podcasts, we have some free information, we have some paid consultation that you can go to these people who are knowledgeable in the industry. You or, you know, some bigger pockets people or anyone they know and they feel connected to. Get information, get educated. Do not follow the herd mentality. Just because the whole crowd is going in a certain market, that might not be the right fit for you. You know, if you're working with a certain budget, then probably, you know, have a discussion with people who understand investments. Probably an older home and renovation projects is not the right fit for you. New construction and just putting in furniture and getting it ready would be an ideal combination. So just don't follow the herd mentality and get more educated in the field that you're wanting.
I would say just be realistic with where you are in your life and how much time you have dedicated to this, because it's not really a passive, short-termers are not passive, so they can be, but when you're getting into it, just be realistic of what it's going to mean for you. That's really it.
Great advice. Mm-hmm. And last question, what's your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
For me, like many others in this industry, is Rich Dad Poor Dad. My dad gave that book to me when I was 13 years old and he picked it up from airport in one of his travels and he handed me. And I think that has, and I come from an entrepreneurial background. My dad is an entrepreneur. So I've seen the ups and downs of the businesses. But that really hit me. I could understand the the liabilities, the assets, and understand the whole industry. And that's what we apply even today. We go back to Rich Dad Poor Dad, the four quadrants and whatnot. And it's been a very influential book. Yes. Cash flow.
I think the one that comes to me is, I think it's called It Takes What It Takes. It's basically about just neutral mindset, neutral mentality. It's like whatever has happened already happened. Given the situation, what's the best way to, what steps you're going to take to recover from it or to advance it and not get caught up into why it happened to me? Why is this happening to me or what happened?
So. Yeah, I haven't read that, but I mean, totally agree. Sometimes I've dealt with other investors in the market where something's happened, like with a seller, they've done something jerky and the buyer's like all hung up on why would they do that? And they, you know, they want to like stick it to them. And I'm like, no, like, don't worry about why. This is the situation that we're in. What do we do to move forward? Exactly. I'm going to check that book out. Nobody's recommended that. Okay, guys. So if our listeners want to follow you, hire you, see all your design projects, where can they do that?
They can find us on Instagram on ishita.interiors. That's our handle. Facebook, my own personal profiles is the best. And our co-hosting side of the business, which we, our own investment co-hosting, is Five Seasons Homestays. So we can probably pop those handle names down below.
Yeah, it's just ishitainteriors.com. That's kind of where it's like a landing page to just book a call with us.
Yeah. So. Book a discovery call and you'll, we can chat.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Very cool.